Welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Boy, we've had a lot of rain, a lot of heat, a lot of humidity here in the Midwest. I think it's spread across the nation over the last few weeks, actually. And as we all know, that takes a toll on our health and everything else. A veteran that's out there, all the veterans, when you've been ill, wounded, injured, or sick as a result of what we call Gulf War illness and everything that we've discussed, this rapid weather changes definitely has an effect. Well, let's continue our discussion. We've had some pretty incredible discussions over the last few weeks dealing with new medical care that we're getting implemented. Dealing last week, we started talking about drug and alcohol abuse, and let's talk about the effects on children of deployment. What happens when the soldier gets deployed, male or female, and how does that affect the children? Ray, you just came back from Camp Lejeune this morning again, didn't you?
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Doug, I want to read something. I put in my book on page 261 of The Never-Ending War, The Unseen Scars of Post-Traumatic Stress, and it talks about the military family. It says, if someone stays in the military for any length of time, they begin to feel and experience a bond that nothing else in civilian life can substitute, even law enforcement and firefighters. It is the element of close military family life, a worldwide community of like-minded people who willingly put their lives on hold in order to protect us at home. They are deployed throughout the world where they put their lives at risk every day to keep us, our country, safe and free. Military families are connected by a common mindset of values, exceptionalism, and purpose. They are truly America's best. If you can spell, thank a teacher. If you can speak in English, thank a veteran. And that's who we're talking about today, is those families. And a lot of them are dealing with a lot of things they probably never had to deal with before. And I hope we can help them with something, Doug.
I do, too. I think when we look at it, and we go back to the Vietnam War where you and I were deployed the first time and got it, communication was via letter. I mean, we did have the Mars network, and if you could lucky, I did get through one time on the Mars network, you know, back home, but it was an extremely difficult thing because you're on a shortwave radio and it's bounced from place to place, and you're releasing and letting go of the button and talking, and you've got all the time delays, so it was very difficult.
Right.
And so correspondence, I'd have letters that it would get to me that had been in the mail for a month or two. In one case, I think I had something that was in the mail for 3 months. Well, when we got to Desert Storm, the mail improved.
And, it was difficult. I think I called home. I had two opportunities during my tour of duty a year. We'd come out of the jungles, and they'd put us somewhere out on a beach somewhere. And one time I stood in a line of about 50 Marines waiting to use a phone. I think they called it star phone, or I forgot what they called it, but you had to say over every time you finished a sentence. And I stood in line, and when I got up there, my father's phone was busy, and so I couldn't stay. The second time I did it, nobody was home, so I gave up trying, and so I went a year without talking to anybody.
Yeah, and correspondence was very difficult. When we got to Desert Storm, letters after a while got to be pretty fast. And if you did have access to a telephone, you could call. And then with the current wars and the current battles from Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, New Dawn, and whatever they call it now, Restore Hope, we're talking about instantaneous contact.
I mean,
when we look at the famous movie, incredible movie, American Sniper, she's on the phone with her husband in the middle of a firefight as she comes out after confirming they're going to have a baby boy.
Wow. That's amazing. It's amazing, and you know they always tell the families, be careful what you tell him because it's going to affect him either positive or negative. And being he's 10,000 miles from home under a lot of stress, he probably doesn't need a whole lot more, so you have to suppress a lot of information.
Yeah, and I think what we've had happen today is that information is not being suppressed because before, and I know I made a very clear thing because I had the opportunity to be the mobilization officer of 330th Medical Brigade prior to Desert Storm and putting this all together. And one thing that I warned everybody is you're basically saying goodbye when you cut the rope. I mean, when you're deployed, you're saying goodbye, and you have to compromise and an attitude that in all probability you're going to be killed or you're going to come back severely wounded. And so life as you knew it has ended at this time. So you have to have everything in preparation. You have to have everything established. You have definitive lines of responsibility, definitive lines of who's going to assume what and do what and how it's going to get done.
That's true.
And now the kids are going out
for
multiple deployments.
That into war, it's like a police officer going on duty, only you're going thousands of miles from home, and you're going to be in maybe in contact with people who are there to kill you. These people are armed, and they want to kill you, and it's all legal. And so when you go into a deadly zone like that, you have to stay focused, whether you're flying aircraft or whether you're doing medical or whatever you're doing and ground combat. If you lose that focus of staying constantly on target or constantly hyper-vigilant, if you want to, you always get into trouble. They say that a lot of veterans, in, just like, for instance, Vietnam, they were killed or hurt in their last weeks. I think it was 1,400 that died on their last day because they get so focused on coming home, they lost their focus about the danger. So that has to be careful.
I know from my own case, and we've talked about it, I flew my last combat mission less than, 36 hours before I ended up back home in a VFW in Libertyville. And I mean, it was like...
That's true.
You have to keep focus. And now what we're seeing is all these problems back home, all these problems that the family has on a daily thing. And I don't mean problem as in bad. I mean the things of daily life. Instead of the veteran going off to war, or the whoever they are, the male or the female, husband, wife, brother, sister, daughter, son, whatever you have, nephew going off to war and being separated from it, they're continuously involved in the daily activities, and as a consequence, your focus in combat can't be good. I mean, I know there. I've been there. I understand this thoroughly. And horrific, as you say, the consequences are when you lose your focus or... Oh, my, the plumbing needs to be fixed. Well, who's going to fix the plumbing? Well, I'm not there to fix it. Well, who's going to do it? No, how are we going to pay for it? I only have so much money.
That's true.
When you're sitting there in combat with the bad guy shooting at you, it's not a time to be thinking about plumbing back home.
That's where the base, where they're coming out of in the United States, they should have a some type of activity, some kind of a unit that would go out and help that plumbing and fix things that have to be repaired like that, because they have nobody there to fix them. I know that our church has something called Love Loud, and we do it once or twice a year. And what we do is we invite military wives that have cars. We change their oil. We do certain things to the car, fix the brakes on it, things like that. And it's called Love Loud. And if more organizations would do that, Doug, these ladies who are dealing with this kind of situation would have some kind of help to fall back on. But if you don't, they're kind of out there in the wind.
Well, you got the deployment. Now, the other thing you come into, obviously, the whole effects on the family. I know my kids have lived through multiple deployments and multiple wars. And, and then my youngest went off on himself for 5 deployments. And that affected his own family.
Right.
But when you go to this, the child, no matter what the age is, all of a sudden has to grow up. All of a sudden has to assume responsibilities. And the frightening part, and I think what we're seeing today, is the parent gets deployed and they make the assumption that the son and daughter are going to be able to assume responsibilities and act beyond their years. They're still children.
True.
They are not adults. They don't have the capability to, rationalize this all out and follow through in logical thought progression. Well, we got to look at the kids themselves being deployed. They're not really ready either, as we've learned in our talks on the radio program. So now you have all this coming to play, and the family's totally disrupted. Their daily routine is disrupted. They do not know if they're alive and well from one day to the next. I mean, granted, communication has changed, from our time in Vietnam and even better in Desert Storm. But you still don't know if you don't have any communication, or, as we said in American Sniper, well, let's get on the cell phone, we'll call in. Oh, no, we're in the middle of a firefight. I wanted to tell you we're having a baby.
That's true. You miss some of the best things in life while you're gone. With Skype and things like that, you do have a little reprieve from that so you can participate. But looking at your baby is not touching your little baby. And as good as it is, it doesn't fix everything. You know, in a perfect world, Doug, when you have the family back home, everybody would get along fine. It'd be like the Waltons, you know, on television or something. But that's not really the case the way things are. There are mental health issues with the wife and the spouse or whoever it is at home. There is, husband, whoever it might be. There's substance use and abuse and things like that. So the kids may not be in a perfect situation, and that just creates more of a problem.
Well, I think the other thing we're seeing, and it doesn't mean to say we didn't have these problems before, but the parameters, I'm going to all this stuff, the basics of the families in the military now, you don't exactly enlist in the smartest and the brightest, and they end up with a lot of kids, so they're having... I mean, they're already on limited functional capability, or they're limited on what they can do and understand and take care of on their own. And now this whole thing gets disrupted. And when you've got small kids and they're off to war, and the parents are off to war, the kid doesn't understand what's happening other than the parent is not there. The expectation they have for discipline could change, or probably does change, may change. So there's nobody there to back up the other spouse. And then you've got all of the problems within the family. I know my own son's had a problem. Well, your dad is dead. Your dad's in war. Your dad is dead today. You know, like,
wow.
Wait a minute. What am I supposed to think? You're telling my dad is dead. I don't know. I haven't talked to him for months.
Right. Yeah, you just have to be careful that you don't create the problems as a military family. But, neighbors and things can really come aboard and help out. I remember in... Greenville, which is a ECU community or college, actually, about 40 miles from where I live. I remember one of my daughters, actually, it was her neighbor. Her husband was killed in Iraq, I guess it was. And the whole neighborhood just came in there and took over the family and just helped them for a long time and helped them to comfort them. And they ended up moving back where they came from. But the neighbors could do so much to help these military families. These people, Doug, it's like the 1% that are serving of the nation that 99% needs to pitch in on. You know, they had a saying in World War II, and it said, they also serve who stand and wait. And that is the family, and that is also the neighbors and everybody who is looking forward to that guy coming back home. He may come back with more issues, but the more people that are there to help out and cushion the blows, the better that family's going to make out.
Well, today we're seeing problems. I mean, we've got drug and alcohol abuse throughout the military, not only in those that are being deployed or in coming back after deployment, but those prior to deployment. So, I mean, that is a real, real problem. We got these families that are escaping out, so the individual is escaping out of an area where he came from or his family life, whatever non-existent that was, or hopefully very, very stable. But he's gone into the military. And now then he creates his own family. Now, whether or not he has the capability to maintain and operate his own family, given where he came from or she came from, is questionable. So now we're seeing all of these problems. So they didn't have the capabilities to deal with on a normal basis, and now one or the other disappears. So now the children are left behind. They may or may not have discipline. They don't know what their life is going to be the next day. They know something is seriously wrong and something is missing, but they can't truly comprehend or come up with a solution to solve it because their life depends entirely on those two parents together.
That's true. And I really believe it works best with two people. God created it that way. I think we all got here the same way with a male and a female. And that's the best way it works. Now, many times people have to loan it a single parent. But, you know, it's hard for a female to give them the comfort and the attention that a mom can do, but it's also have the discipline of that man. All he has to do is walk in the room. It's something about that makes the children kind of sit down and not say nothing for a while. But when he's gone, the children get a little rebellious sometimes. And then they'll talk back to their mom. They might even get very verbal with them. I've seen them do that before. And so it just is kind of a downward thing. We also have an influence on children with social media now because their friends have expanded to hundreds of people at school and different places. It also opens it up to predators. So these kids are being influenced from a lot of different directions. And if the parent doesn't watch those cell phones and watch the social media with a child, they could lose that child. That child may leave them.
Yeah, because they're looking for to replace something that's falling apart within the family, aren't they?
That's right. And they're naturally drawn to some things like affection, security, and they need correction. When a child is looking for affection, that's a very dangerous thing because there's some people out there that are predators and child molesters and all these things, and that's how they will attract children, by helping them, talking with them, doing things, give them a lot of affection, and then they draw them away from the family. If the parent is not proactive and watching that child and keeping tabs on who they're talking to on the internet, some of the phone, social media, and all these things, that child can slip away from you. And once they get in contact with people, it's hard to ever get them back again because they grow up so quickly in the hands of somebody else. And so it's just a dangerous place, and it happens all the time.
You know, I mean, when you're looking at, obviously, we got the stage of deployment. We got pre-deployment, which is going to be a nightmare. All of a sudden, they get the word they're going to be deployed. I mean, when we look at the literature, some of the recommendations, it says here, discuss responsibilities, expectations of each family member during the upcoming deployment. Make plans and goals for the family rather than put lives on hold. Again, you got to decrease the likelihood of misperception, distortion. I mean, have everything planned out. I mean, as you know, who are you going to do? But the same thing when you've got responsibilities change. You can't give a 10-year-old the responsibilities of a 20-year-old.
No.
You can't expect that to do it. A child that's in high school has not fully developed reasoning and everything, no matter how smart and bright they may be. They're not adults. So the expectations have to be left in place for their appropriate age group, given the stresses they're going to be under. So, I mean, that's putting everything together in a common sense approach, and it seems too often that's fallen apart, hasn't it?
It has, and, you know, I think the natural thing, we've talked about this a lot of times, when a trauma happens to a person, it's always a natural instinct to just sit down and stop moving. Maybe pull a blanket over your head in a sense of saying it. Just stay away from everybody. You're wounded, you're hurt, you're injured, you're abandoned. And that happens the same way with children when they lose a parent, whether it's divorce or sometimes deployment, because it can last for, I knew one Marine hadn't been home in 3 years. He was in a special unit over in Iraq and Kuwait, and he was caught up in that, and he ended up losing his family over it. Had two little twins and all this stuff. I've got a granddaughter, had a baby about 3 weeks ago. Well, her husband got his orders the other day, and so he's gone on special operations, and she has no idea where he is. He's gone for a couple weeks. Now, she's a young mother. I mean, brand new mother with a brand new baby with brand new problems. She's trying to recover, and if it weren't for family, that girl would be in a mess. But that happens all the time, Doug, with these young girls. And so they have to grow up really quick, and that sometimes brings problems of becoming kind of a hardened to things. And by the time the guy comes back, she's changed a lot. She's more mature. She's a fighter now. She's made it for her own, and it's hard for him to fit back in.
I think during deployment, again, it says your initiate plans made during pre-deployment, continue family traditions, develop new family traditions, facilitate children's understanding of the finite nature of the deployment and timelines. Again, but in this, you just described, sometimes those timelines can't be done. We got a sustainment, established support system. Here's again what you just described, extended family and friends, religious group, family support group, etc. Communicate with the deployed service member via email and phone letters. Avoid overspending. Oh, boy, I can't even begin to describe that one. I mean, it's a likelihood, and all the thing, when one gets deployed, the other spouse is going to spend more money than they have available and spend some time, you know, again, without the children. You have all these responsibilities, but you still have to maintain your own sanity and your own, how would you put it, abilities without all collapsing down around.
That's true.
You know, so it's kind of putting this thing somehow all together to make it work. But again, when the daily problems of a family life are intertwined with combat military operations, it ain't going to turn out good.
No, I know the officers' wives have something, and I assume the enlisted do too, but a lot of young girls don't want to participate in groups like that. But you remember that movie, We Were Soldiers, and how Moore's wife, she was a lieutenant colonel, commanding officer, she took over, and she was really, had these young women, and she was trying to teach them and trying to show them how to do things, and they had a collective group of ladies there, and it happens like that. But there's a lot of them that they just feel like they're not part of it or something, and so they're trying to wing it on their own, and it's a difficult thing. Now, the Marine Corps has booklets on how to prepare for deployment, how to get things going in deployment, and it warns you of a lot of mistakes like you're talking about. Okay, you've got the checkbook now. Nobody's checking you, and you just have to be careful. There's a lot of military today, especially privates, PFCs, people like that, that are on food stamps because they don't make enough money to do everything they need. And it's really a problem. But the way you get by on that is collectively people around you that will come together and form. During the Gulf War, Doug, my wife and I owned a bakery. And these ladies from Cherry Point, it was officer wives, came to me and they said, we need something to encourage us. We need something because we're all depressed. We're all just struggling right now. Our husbands are overseas. We don't know what to do. We don't know where they are. We never know anything about them. And that was during 1991 when you were over there. And so what I did was I said, well, let me work on it. So what I did, these were Marine Corps wives. I took a big red heart and drew it on a cake, filled it all in, and I put a Marine Corps emblem right in the center of that heart. And I put on there, Marine Corps families, heart of the Corps, they also serve who stand and wait. And they said they slobbered all over that cake. They were just crying and boo-hooing. And you know, these ladies need a touch of love, what they need, somebody to care about them. Because they feel abandoned sometimes, not intentionally maybe, but because of deployment. When they signed on with their husband to marry them, they also signed on to the military. And it says, when I need you, I send you. And my granddaughter's husband, I don't know where he is right now. He'll be back in about a week or two. But she has to let go, and she has to take care of that baby in some way, some form, some fashion. And she's in the process right now of learning how to take care of that baby. So it's up to the family to support her.
When you come back, you're coming back, redeployment, we've all been there and came home. I mean, the differences have changed. Our fathers, when they came back from World War II, they were on a ship or whatever. They didn't have airplanes to fly everybody back and forth usually. And so you had a long time between you got out of combat and you were back home. Well, it changed with Vietnam. I mean, we were deployed to Vietnam as individuals, not as entire units.
True.
You rotated in and out after 1 year, or in my case, 6 months for ArcLight, and then 18 months later, and then an 18-month tour as a hard hat. But most people had a one-year tour, so they'd rotate in and out on an individual basis. Well, that disrupts the unit quality and disrupts everything together, cohesion. But then when you come back, you got to have, okay, the redeployment. How are you going to come back together? What are you coming into? How do you adjust and everything? I mean, the routines have now changed. You got to maintain those routines. Everybody's assumed new responsibilities. Sort of like when I came back from Desert Storm, my junior high son had learned how to do the barbecue and do the grill. Well, I relinquished that duty to him, because he had picked it up and learned it and really excelled and really loves it to this day. But, when we were together, he even cooked on a grill when we were out there, and he's very, very good at it.
Yeah.
But, again, things have changed, and then how do you come back into that thing and maintain realistic expectations of homecoming, you know, the high expectations? There's going to be problems. It's not going to be all sweet and cozy and everything else. You've been gone. You know, things have changed. People assume new responsibilities. Things did not get done. Things now have to be done.
That's true.
How do we get this all together?
The only thing you can do, and I would recommend it to the ladies, but I know some of them who's gone through, you know, their husbands on deployment and things, and I know them personally. I know them from church and things. But you can look at these ladies, and they take command of the family. They really do. And they they keep it working, functioning. They keep the kids in school. They keep them in activities. They always keep those kids proactive. Limit the television, limit the internet, limit the social media, all these type of things. And what they do is take charge of it. And when the husband comes back home, you know, she usually, because of instant media today, she can, before she makes a decision, she can talk to him. She can get his approval on some things and disapproval, and they kind of hash it out, talk it out and things. And so it's not like walking back into a world that you have changed on you. If it's done right, it's a better transition when you come back home. One of the problems is that many times the spouse at home will become very independent. They've had to do these things, and they've got a pattern of things. They've got their own budget worked out, things. And when the guy walks back in, and he may have a lot of problems from being in combat or things happen, IEDs, all these type of things, he comes back in, and he's in another world anyway. But all of a sudden, his world that he was looking forward to and very comfort zone is not so comfortable anymore. And he feels like a fifth wheel on a tractor trailer or something. He feels like he's useless, and it's very depressing. And so it has to be worked out by family. That's what the Marine Corps, I know around here, is trying to do, is kind of put shocks on them a little bit to where the bumps are not so hard. And when they come back, this coming Monday night, I'll be speaking at a post-traumatic stress graduation ceremony. It's a private organization. Well, it's actually called Reboot. And what it is, a family-oriented post-traumatic stress where they bring the whole family in, and they minister to each one of those people spiritually, mental health, physically, every other way, emotionally. And they're trying to regroup that family again, and hopefully it'll be better than it ever was.
I mean, to continue on what Pincus is recommending here again, Pincus from 2007, post-deployment. Take time to communicate and get to know each other. You both have changed.
Right.
Spend time talking to each other.
You know, a lot of young couples, especially like Vietnam, it seemed to be that when men go to war, especially back then it was mostly men, but there was a lot of women too, but when they go to war, they want to be married. It's something they don't know if they'll ever fulfill life. Things could change radically. They could either be killed or maybe crippled or something bad happen. And so they want to get married. And so they get married, but they're gone within weeks of marriage. They fulfilled that kind of a bucket list thing, you know, in their life. But life is changing. And if that young lady doesn't get involved with family or somebody, the marriage could be in danger. And so a lot of bad things happen, you know, and because I live around a military bases, you've got a lot of young people in the military. And, I mean, they're good-looking. They're very active. They're very physical. A lot of the things, they have a lot of physical beauty about them, and it's a danger zone. So you have to, this is what I tell them, Doug. I'm a chaplain, so I tell them this. Before they marry, I'll say, look, if God doesn't send you that spouse, you really don't want them, because he can watch them when you can't, and he'll help them. And he will minister to them, and he will comfort them when nobody else can. And he also can watch them, and he will help them in ways that, you know, you've got to have help. And I found out that God is with me all the time, and I'm sure you can say the same thing. And so he would never desert me. He will never desert me. And that's a big deal to someone who has met, you know, had to deal with desertion before. So we can tell them how we made it. I was talking to Marines today, and some of these guys were older Marines getting ready to retire, but they're dealing with post-trauma. And I told them, I have been where you are, but you've also been where some of these young guys are. And when I'm talking to you, I'm encouraging myself, you need to talk to them and tell them what you learned. Because if you don't tell them, they're not going to know. And it comes from you, it's even more powerful. And so I think that's something we can all do, military people, is that we can turn and help somebody. Don't give them all the bad stuff, but give them some good stuff, because that will help secure their lives.
No, it says here, take time to make decisions and changes in routines. Routines have changed in the house when you come back, or your expectations. I think all of us had incredible, I know myself, had incredible expectations, and they didn't materialize. Keep plans simple and flexible. Don't try to schedule too many things during those first few weeks. I mean, this is kind of wisdom Pincus had put out many years ago, and I think it goes back, I know these same things go back, as far as I know, before Vietnam. So there's not any changes here as far as, you know, what's going to happen or how they're going to work.
That's true. I mean, you know, the old thing about the tortoise and the rabbit, you can. They say the person who runs the fastest is the first to give up on a race. And so you have to pace yourself. And you're exactly right. I mean, when you have to get a plan before they leave, and then you have to try to make it function while they're gone. And they used to talk, matter of fact, a friend of mine was telling me recently, he was in a convenience store and somebody in front of him had bought a couple hot dogs and chips and a drink and something. And he said he went through 22 credit cards trying to pay for the thing. I mean, you have to be able to regulate. You have to be able to discipline yourself. You're trying to teach your children discipline, but the parent needs discipline too. And you have to, they used to say, put your credit card in ice, and that way you got to thaw it out before you could use it. And by that time, you would probably reconsider what buying something that you don't need. But you really have to understand that just because you got a few bucks in the bank does not mean you can go out and spend everything, because you're going to need it for something else.
You know, when we look at the effects on children and everything else, obviously a young child doesn't understand what's happening. They don't. Their hopes and the dreams for their future. I mean, they're totally dependent on for food, water, love, and everything. And we're talking about up through high school age and even into college age. And so they're totally affected. I mean, some of the researchers came back and they looked at, this is the percentage of the kids think about this stuff where they're worried a lot. I will worry about my military parent while he or she is deployed.
Oh, yeah.
Over 50% are actually worried a lot about this. We'll worry about the parent who takes care of me while my other parent is deployed. 40% are worried about that. My military parent talked to me about deployment. Only 30% did. I like to keep track of the news about the war. Well, that's down around 23%. How can a child understand what's happening in the war and understand what's the news and what it means, because the implications are beyond their thinking. Only they're looking at is like, how am I secure tomorrow? I will get to do more things on my own. About 30% are indicating that. Here we go. I've had or had trouble with schoolwork. My parent is deployed. 20% are indicating they've had a lot of problems with schoolwork. I spent a lot of time with other military kids while my parents away, around 27%. Well, my military parent was away, my parent at home acted the same as always. 40% said yes. You know, I mean, teachers understand what it's like from being a military kid. 35% thought they did. Kids who don't have families in the military understand what it's like to be in the military. 20% understood that. I mean, you know, you got some very significant things here that the child is worried about. The child does not able to have the ability to cope with while the parent is deployed or getting deployed or right after they come back.
It's true. I mean, the child can't process certain things. I mean, it's good if the guy's going to be deployed and you see your parents kissing each other and hugging each other and loving on each other and all this, and then he leaves, you know everything is good. He's coming back more than likely. And so it does help that. But a child can go through grieving for a year's time. I mean, even an animal can grieve for somebody. When I was in Vietnam, I had a little fox terrier. I had him ever since I was in like the seventh grade or something. And that little dog was like my best buddy. And my dad kept that dog when I went to Marine Corps. When I went to Vietnam, he said that dog just moped around for the entire time I was gone. And he said, the night I called home and said, Dad, I'm on my way home, he said, that dog came alive. And I know it sounds crazy when I say that, but there's a lot of things that are affected by us, and children can grieve themselves to really, I mean, it's hard to get them back out. I taught martial arts for 25 years, and I've worked with a lot of kids, military families, deployed children, different things. Doug, I've always tried to mentor them as best I could. I've always tried to be there for them and give them the information I have. One of the things I tell them is, if you would think back over the last year, all the things that you imagined were going to happen compared to what the things really happened, it would really surprise you that most things do not happen that you thought it would. And so, you know, they always said the devil is a master of imagination. You worry yourself over stuff, there's no need. You can pray, actually, and ask God to take care of things, and that'll give you some peace about it. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that we can share with people. When I did the martial arts, I was taking children, and I was showing them defensive tactics with the martial arts of how to evade certain people or how to get away from even adults. There were some things that I taught that you couldn't teach the child. I couldn't teach the child, but I would teach their parents, and the parent could teach their child. Because if that child got rowdy and decided to use it on a teacher or somebody, then I didn't want to go to jail. But you can actually take a child, and you can teach him how to protect himself mentally, physically, spiritually, and you're equipping that child to be a little more safer than what he would be otherwise. The parent can't be with them all the time. So my only suggestion in keeping them in sports, keeping them in martial arts, keeping them in church, know the teacher. Vet the teacher. Find out what the teacher is teaching your child. You want to make sure they're doing what's right. We had a policy. We never tried to make a monster out of anybody. I would teach them out of the book of Proverbs and the Bible. For instance, a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. About being nice, being polite, being all these things, courteous, and then being serious if you have to be. But we need mentors that will help our children because they're not getting it at home. And so they don't have to be it don't have to be the military either. You see that all over the place. And so we can teach them certain disciplines that will help them and help the parents.
Yeah, the stories in Army Times and the military discussions right now, they're calling them millennials. This is an entirely new group of people that are brought up with technology and everything, questioning authority and everything else. The whole concept of consistent discipline has gone out the way of the dodo bird. And they're indicating they're lost when they come in the military because the discipline required to go into combat is substantially different than what is civilian world. However, if you apply discipline and honor and ethics and morality in the civilian world, you're not going to have any problems at all. It's just going to be hunky-dory. But we're seeing a whole group that are coming in that don't have those standards. And now the whole question is, well, how do we deal with it? Where do we go? I mean, the military itself is kind of like in a quandarium. I mean, how do you want to? They're lost even among themselves saying, how do I respond to this different group with different expectations and different ideas
that fit
into what we know works and does not work?
Well, as a parent, you have to be proactive as far as watching your children, limiting certain things to them. You say, well, all my friends are doing it. Well, I'm sorry, you're not doing it. You live here. And so you keep your children real close to you. And I'm not saying smother them. I'm just saying know what your children are doing, limit certain things, limit television, limit Internet, limit even cell phones, because they will supplement for themselves. They will substitute for themselves. And if they're looking for affection, they're not getting it because the father or mother has gone away and the other one is a little bit less discipline-wise, then they will take advantage of everything. But you've got to keep the influences down because those influences will change your child from the inside out, and they'll become very rebellious. And it's like you said, they will gang up with gangs of people who are in the same situation. But they also open themselves up to a lot of adults who are unsavory and you would not want around your children. And so it happens all the time.
Yeah, that gets kind of frightening because if the child is missing love at home or doesn't have safety and security or is missing something, they're going to go look for it.
Well, that's true. And, you know, and that's where most people, you know, you find if you do any researching on types of predators, they always try to chum up with the child and try to give them things and try to be nice to them and talk to them and sit down and play with them. That's what they were wanted the whole time anyway. And so the spouse at home has double duty. They not only have to take care of the adult stuff, but they also have to take care of the child stuff. They need to be at games. They need to help their children if they possibly can. And they also need to know who's teaching their children, because it may be teaching them things that you don't want them to learn. And so you have to do those things. It breaks down when the spouse leaves home. It breaks down the cohesion of the family. It breaks down the discipline. One of the problems I always had in martial arts was we went to tournaments. We trained for tournaments. All these kids would be competing. I never had to teach one of them how to win. I mean, I taught them to win, but they always had to learn how to lose, because if they came in second place, they always say, "Well, you're first place loser," that kind of deal. The kid always throws an attitude or says things they didn't really mean. We never tolerated that, Doug. We said, no. You're going to learn how to lose also, because that's a good lesson in life. You always try to win, but that doesn't work out all the time. And if you acted up out there on that floor in front of a lot of people, we would escort you off that floor. And then we'd put some kind of punishment on you. And then we'd say, you can't come back unless you adhere to our standards. And what it did, it taught those kids a little bit of discipline of saying, look, I've got to stay in line. I mean, I love what I'm doing, but I've got to stay in line in order to do it. If we did more of that and there was a little more discipline, we wouldn't have the problems we have today.
I think there's one thing that I'm picking up on as I read more and more on it and learn from teaching school at different levels. Too many today have the expectation that I'm going to get a prize or a reward just for doing the minimum. In other words, just for showing up. I mean, that's what the Army Times story is indicating. These new guys are coming to the military, and they expect to be rewarded for doing the minimum, just doing what they're expected.
That's true.
I mean, I was raised and brought up, you didn't get a reward unless you excelled and did something extraordinary.
That's right.
And now the expectation is that everybody is rewarded at all times. And then also, the sound expectation for what's right or wrong has changed. I mean, we've had this conversation over and over again. That sound, consistent discipline, that sound ethics or morality base, which is Judeo-Christian based, has disappeared.
Well, if you could learn certain things and carry it through childhood and leave it there, it wouldn't be so bad. But they're bringing it into adulthood. The same characteristics, the same bad temperament, the same expectations. You're not going to get rewarded in life, in adulthood, if you don't achieve. We always had three places, first, second, and third. If there was 100 people, you still had first, second, and third. You have to compete. You have to try harder. You can't just play games and get out there and expect something. We would give people, you know, everybody got a reward up to about 5 years old, from 3 to 5. That's where martial arts things, because you don't expect anything out of them, and you wanted to appease them a little bit. They were kids. They were little kids. But after about 6 years old, you had to compete. And not everybody gets a prize. You get a prize, and when you don't get a prize, it tells you, and we would be there for them to help them understand. We're going to come back next year, and we're going to get a prize. But because we're going to try harder, we're going to learn better, we're going to apply ourselves, and we're going to do a better job at it. And we used to tell them, train, 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 train. The day of the competition, you go out there, enjoy yourself. You've done all the hard work. Now show them what you've got. And if you don't win, it's okay. You go up to the winner and you shake his hand, you congratulate him, and you walk away. And we all go away winners. But if you get out there and show yourself, all you do is make yourself look foolish. And people will laugh at you, actually. So we always try to make good people out of these, good citizens out of them, and teach them a lot of life skills, too.
Another thing that we run into and we have to be concerned with is the physiological effects of war. You come back wounded or injured, and the mother or the father or brother or sister, whoever it is that's in the family, has gone to war and they come back injured.
True.
We know from the type of contamination in the military operations today that contamination, those health effects, can be passed on to the children. We know Agent Orange is passed on genetically. We know the effects of depleted uranium and the radiological changes in RNA and DNA are passed on genetically. So we're seeing all of these medical problems that can now be passed on to the child. So the parent comes back with medical problems, and then the child is born afterwards. I mean, that's where, you know, Paul committed suicide. He reached the point of no return. His wife was sick, and his children born after he came back were sick, and he couldn't deal with this anymore. So we're dealing with the real nightmare of a situation.
It is. When you find out your mom doesn't have legs anymore, or your dad doesn't have legs, or you maybe missing other parts. I knew one that was a quadriplegic, and he lost all these legs and arms, and he came back home, and he had a family. That's a shock. I mean, to these kids, it may be a lot of attention for a few weeks. Everybody's helping out, but when it settles down, that's when it comes into focus. But I heard a man that had cerebral palsy recently. He was talking about, he's got about five. They said he'd never be married. He got married. They said he'd never have children. He's got about four children, I think it is. They're about grown now. He was talking about his youngest daughter. She's 17. And he said, that's the one that tries me. We always butt heads. And so we were talking recently, and they love each other, but they still, that's growing up. And the young girl told him, said, I didn't ask to be in this family. And the father said, I didn't ask for you to be in this family either. But since we're here together, let's work together. Let's get this thing done. And I think that's the case many times. We didn't ask for the problem, but how we respond to it could make all the difference, not only in our family, but all the other families that are watching us. You can end up being a hero. Doug, if you do something that's brave for other people, you're a hero. But if you do something brave for your own self-glory, you end up looking like a fool because there's nothing in that. So when you're trying to help a family, say your family, when they have been injured, when they've been hurt, when they've been beat down, when they're struggling, and you cooperate and you try to participate and you try to give what you can, you're a hero. You're a hero in not only your dad or mom's eyes, but you're a hero to the whole world watching you. And so it kind of behooves every child of the military parent, do your part. Even more than that, do more than your part. Help your mom, she's struggling, or help your dad, he's struggling. And you will be a hero, I promise you. And it will pay off later in life.
You know, another problem we have, and I've not been there, so I don't understand this. The divorce rate amongst Vietnam veterans as they came back was catastrophic.
Yeah.
And then 94%. The divorce rates of military with these young kids is pretty high, and it's pretty scary. How does this divorce affect the children? I mean, those kids that I know that came from divorced families, the effects on them is pretty significant. But how does all this come into play? I mean, if the family disintegrates all around, what's happening to the child? Where do they turn?
Well, it's called abandonment. You know, we suffer with that too. And you can imagine being a 6, 8, 10, 12-year-old that suddenly the most two important people in your life, and that they were your heroes, have walked out on you. And they decide they don't want to be married anymore. Now, I know the fighting has stopped. A lot of the infighting goes on inside the house, so nobody sees it but you and them. And the children will hide from it. It's almost relief when the person goes away. But it's a feeling of abandonment and lost. And how are we going to make it, and how am I going to make it? You see your mom or whoever it is with you crying and weeping, and they're sad, and, whatever the problem was. It could have been anybody. But the fact is, it's abandonment. And that child, I talked to Marines today, Doug, and they had a sense of abandonment where they came back, and they're having a lot of marital problems, they're having a lot of mental health problems, they're having all these things trying to readjust. And I was able to give them a program of where you draw a line in the sand between yesterday and today. Yesterday you were surviving. Tomorrow you can be thriving. But it all depends what you do right now. And so what you do is you draw a metaphoric line in the sand, and you say, I am not going to let this thing destroy me. And you take one step forward, and you're able to you take a deep breath and say, look, I am not going to let that destroy my life. You can't allow your past to control your future. And I know when you came back, you went right to college. That's smart, Doug. I mean, I didn't do that, and I suffered because of it. And so you can do it the way you want to do it. But if you want to survive this thing and you want to thrive, you can either be a blue-collar worker or you can be a white-collar worker. It's all up to you. The only difference between me and the people I admire are the choices I make, when I'm young especially. And if you would just start hanging around better people, find people who are achieving or want to help you achieve, and you could do great things in this world. You don't have to be stuck back there and become a victim. You can actually be a victor.
You know, I'd like to, we got a few minutes left, I'd like to read something. Western Illinois University has put together a group of veterans readings. It's called SITREP, Veterans Perspectives on Combat and Peace. This Western Illinois University, Macomb, Illinois, and it's just published here in the last few weeks. This is a poem. It was written by Jared Worley. He's the editor of the nonfiction portion of this compendium. To whom it may concern, whoever you are, I fear you are taking a long walk of unsatisfied nightmares. I fear this apparent dream of dreams is melting within you like the pavement under your feet. Even now, your face and body stand before me in the night, and your hopes, aspirations, and fears have become mine. Your sacrifice will not die with you. It stands out amongst everything I do, the constant reminder of a life cut short in order for my life to mean something. Whoever you are, now I place my head upon you, that you will be my inspiration. I give to you with every ounce of my being, close to my heart, but I have loved many, yet I have none better than you. Jared Worley, May 2016.
That's amazing.
I mean, these writings, again, here's another one, too, and this deals with the suicide rate of 22. What singest thou, it said? Knowest thou not there but one theme for ever-enduring bards? And that theme is of war, the fortune of battles, the making of perfect soldiers. A quote from Walt Whitman. Battle-hardened soldier, I watch you. Pull the trigger so fast it scares me. Mind games don't leave me. Move so fast, don't lose me. It matters where you are. As reality hits, I'll be waiting. With the coffins under the flag, hey, survival, you're still returning from a war you cannot escape. Battle-hardened soldier, I watch you. Placing the opening into the back of your throat, memories don't leave me. 22 per day, don't lose me. It matters where they are. As the sun hits, I'll be waiting. With the tears of your loved ones and friends, hey, soldier, you've come a long way from a war you cannot escape. Jared Worley.
Wow, that's amazing, too. I called my book The Never-Ending War, Doug, and that was for a reason, because it doesn't go away. I told those young Marines today, I said, you know, I found out later in life that I found out God is not a crutch for the weak. He is actually a stretcher for the wounded and dying like you and I. And it was like, God carries me when I can't go any further. If we don't have something to come to lean on or something to help carry us, we're really abandoned. And a lot of these young men and women are losing hope, and that's when they contemplate suicide, is they lose hope. We've got to be able to give them hope.
And that hope and that dream comes with making choices of your own. I mean, as we said over and all, choose who your friends are.
Yeah.
Make a choice of what you want to do. Because as all these kids have done, and it can indicate, and we've learned, and we hear all the time, everybody can excel. They just got to make the choice to do it and to follow through and take the help that's offered.
That's true.
Granted, we're having an incredible amount of problems getting optimal medical care from the VA and the military today.
Right.
But something
well, you
resolved.
Know, you are. And but when you just said what you said, that is a big, 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 big deal. Choose your friends wisely, because you'll probably end up like the people you're hanging around. And you have to reevaluate life every once in a while and look about who you're hanging around and what you're getting from them, because everybody is telling you something. You've got to hang around people who have a goal and who are moving toward that goal. If it's a light kind of goal that you like to do, if you admire those people, you start making choices that they made, and then you start following them, and they will actually help you to achieve. If you don't, those people that you're hanging around will either pull you down or they lift you up. And it's your choice. Where do you want to end up? Do you want admiring people, or do you want to be admired? And it's all in our choices.
You know, I've seen too often, and I've avoided it, and I've seen it happen too many. People have regarded, we talked about this last week, alcohol and drug abuse. When it calls and falls apart, they all rely on that. I can't understand for the life of me why individuals, whether civilian or military, want to go out and drink all the time or drink a six-pack of beer a night, or as you said, now they can have it in the barracks. I mean, I just don't understand why anybody would do that, because it limits your functioning ability, it limits your options, and it's not necessary. I mean, again, it's making a choice of what you're going to do.
Well, I think it's a lack of focus, too, Doug. You have no real goal that you've set, and you're not even pressing toward it. If you are, you're kind of playing around it. But the drinking is almost like a reprieve from reality of where you go to just hang out and slop around and drink and party. You call it a party, but that's really not exactly what it is. What it is, a lot of broken people coming from broken lives, and they get together and they get drinking and partying, and yeah, they feel good for a little while. But then they break up and go back into their broken homes and broken lives, and it's worse than it was in the beginning. Now it's worse because you've spent a lot of money you didn't have. You're under the influence of alcohol. If you get a DWI, it's $10,000 for that thing, and you lose your license. You could lose your job. You could lose your career. So it really comes down to the fact is you've got to make better choices. The family has to make better choices. If you would get with your family, if you're in the military or even not in the family or in the military, if you would get some other opinions on this thing about making choices, you'd be amazed about some of the better choices you make and the results for those things.
Making choices is what it's all about. I mean, we're down to our last minute or two here, Ray. What do you think is going to happen in the future with the new kids that are coming into the military and coming out? I mean, you're working with them on a daily basis. Are we seeing a positive influence? Are we seeing a negative influence? Are we seeing wild opportunities? Are we seeing the status quo where it can all disintegrate?
Doug, I see the ones who are reaching out for help. There's a lot of them, but there's a lot of them that aren't. And I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what kind of influence that they have. They may have family that will take care of them and get them straightened out, or they may not. They have the opportunities of school and things like that, but if they don't understand about life's choices and how they have repercussions of it, with every choice we make, there are consequences or there are blessings, and that they would understand that. But I don't know, Doug. I see them kind of falling off the edge all the time. And so what we're trying to do is reach everybody we can, and that's all we can do. This program is amazing because there may be millions of people that hear what we're saying today that have never been in the military. But they can understand what we're saying, and it's very important, Doug, and I appreciate you doing this.
You know, the education is that today with the GI Bill, like from World War II on, everybody has the opportunity to go back in any education, vocational, technical, academic, become a professional, a doctor, a lawyer, an Indian chief. It's a choice they make, and they have to do it, don't they?
Thank
you, Ray. God bless you. Next week, we're going to talk about pesticides and the child and the effects of learning. Have a good week, and thank you very much. Good night.